Hello, and welcome to SearchCRM.com. I'm Lauren Horwitz, Executive Editor in the Business Applications and Architecture Group. And subscription-based models have gained traction among companies as a way to satisfy consumers' need for more flexible delivery and pricing options. And companies can also build more ongoing relationships with customers as a result of a leasing model. But there are some cons to expect as well. Companies are going to have to continually prove their value with these kinds of models. So today, to discuss some of the trends surrounding subscription models, I have joining me Brent Leary, a founder and partner at CRM Essentials. So welcome, Brent.
Lauren, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So Brent, as is often the case, I have many, many questions for you. And my first is, why are subscription-based models gaining traction recently?
Well, I think the main reason is because customers like it. Customers are really gravitating towards being able to consume a lot of the things that they used to have to buy outright in a more friendly format for them from a pricing perspective and from a consumption perspective. You can look no further than kind of what's going on with the music industry and how just recently, I guess it was a couple weeks ago, how Apple has just bought Beats, you know, the folks, Dr. Dre, Beats, headphones, but also I think the main thing, the main part of Beats that was of interest to Apple was the Beats music service. And I think you look at how Apple changed the game for music purchasing and consumption and distribution back in 2001 with the iPod and iTunes, and so you could go on iTunes and buy a song for a dollar and then listen to it on your iPod, and at the time that was great, it was revolutionary, it changed the whole way the music industry worked. But fast forward to 2014, and now you have sites like Spotify and Pandora and like Beats that for $10, if you're used to paying $10 to get 10 songs under the iTunes model, now $10 gets you access to 20 million songs. And so it's a big difference today. Your $10 can go a much further way today than it could, you know, back in the days of the iPod was put together. So, you know, customers gravitate, they like this, and they want more variety, they want access to more, 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 but they don't want to have to pay for it like in the traditional model. So I think that's why you see customers gravitating to this, not just for music, but for other things, like the Dollar Shave Club, where you can pay a monthly fee and get your shaving things brought to you, right to your house. Tie Society, where you can go and get a tie, just sort of like Netflix. You go online, you go to tiesociety.com, and you look at their great variety of ties. You pick the ones you want to wear, they send it to you, you wear it for a while, and then you put it back in the envelope and you get the next one. So I think behaviors are changing because the way that subscriptions are working is much more aligned with the way customers are living today.
Right. So you've really laid out the case for why this has value for customers. But why do you think companies can benefit from this model as well?
Well, I think there are a couple of big benefits. Let's face it, it takes a lot of time and effort and resources to bring on a new customer. You go through the marketing phase and lead acquisition phase and then, you know, qualifying that lead and then going into the full-blown sales cycle and then hopefully at the end of all that, you're able to bring these folks on board. Well, that takes a lot of time and effort. And so to go through that process and only have those folks buy once or twice and then they fall off, that makes it really difficult, and it keeps you in that perpetual, you know, looking for customer phase, you know, more percentage of your time and effort spent in that phase than you really want it to be. And so when you look at the subscription model, there's a lot of effort that has to be made in order for you to bring on a customer and to keep them, but you're set up to be interacting with the customer in a much more consistent, regular basis. And I think that interaction helps you stay connected over a longer amount of time. And if you're able to stay connected over a longer amount of time, that typically means you're selling more to the customer. And if you're building the right kind of relationship over time, you'll not only have them as a customer, not only as a loyal customer who sticks around longer, but actually even as a bit of an advocate who will not only, you know, buy more things from you, but they will tell other folks that you should do, they should be buying from you as well. So you have, I think, a more of an opportunity to stay connected and to stay on their attention path. And then the other thing is, with subscription models, you have a much more likelihood of having revenue that is more consistent. And so it's not just somebody comes into a store, you know, one day, buys $10 worth of stuff, then you might not see them for another 2 or 3 months, and then they may buy $5 worth of stuff. The subscription model is really focused on consistent delivery of value and in return, consistent delivery of revenue from the customer. So you get more consistency, and you have a more opportunity to stay connected with customers, which I think are both in the best interest of a company going forward.
Right. So it's a whole new way, really, of thinking about that relationship with your customer.
Yeah, I think it's a switch, a transition away from transaction-based relationships where, you know, you would produce a product. Let's say you produce a widget, and then you would sell the widget, and then you may not talk to these folks again until it's time to meet your sales quota and you want to try to sell some more widgets. Whereas the subscription model is definitely more relationship driven. It's value driven too, because you always have to be showing that the value that you are presenting to the customer. So, but in return, by being able to show that value, to stay connected, to have those interactions much more frequently, you have a chance to build a solid relationship, a solid relationship than you talk to them every once a quarter when you need to sell them something. This time, it's more based on, you know, monthly value creation, and also taking those interactions, the feedback you may get from them, and baking it in to provide more products, more services that are really focused around their needs at that time. And if you're able to do that, you really do stand a much greater likelihood of keeping them around longer. And the longer you are able to keep a customer, the more focused you are on extending the value as opposed to bringing on new customers all the time.
And you already started to talk about some kind of standouts in the market, companies that have really made this their calling card. Can you talk about why they've done such a great job, and maybe there are examples of companies that haven't done such a great job of using this model?
Well, it's kind of interesting. I always look at kind of the poster children for subscriptions being companies like Amazon, of course, Amazon.com. I've kind of been curious because I'm in the midst of writing a book about it, and the reason I started writing about kind of how Amazon has changed the game for customer engagement, it really focuses around an idea or a thought where somebody asked me, what's the most fascinating company, a couple of years ago? And, you know, this is in the midst of the rise of social media, and, you know, Facebook is reaching 1 billion people. And immediately I started thinking about, well, you know, Amazon, because I've been buying stuff from this website for 15 years or so, and I have never talked to anybody there. How did I build such a relationship with a company that I have no personal connections with, no personal relationships? I never talked to anybody. Right. And I started thinking about how the tide turned for me with them when Amazon Prime came out and they offered the 2-day free shipping for, I think it was at the time it was $79 a year. And I was like, this is great because I'm buying more and more stuff. And if I can get my stuff, you know, 2 days or less, and it doesn't cost me anything extra, I'm going for it. So I was happy just from that standpoint. But then over the years, they've added things like the video streaming service, the book sharing service, and now just last week they announced the music streaming service, and all of these things have been added on as a value add to the initial membership. And what it's done, and you know, for me personally, is I've been a member since 2006, and I can't imagine, even with the $20 increase, I think it's still a huge bargain. But then I look at the membership numbers, and Amazon Prime membership numbers are, I think the last estimate is over 20 million members. And if you're a member, chances are you're going to spend twice as much as a non-Amazon Prime member on the Amazon site. You're going to shop in more categories than the non-Amazon Prime members. You're going to buy more expensive items. And even the research shows that the typical Amazon Prime member makes more money than the non-Amazon Prime member. So those are some huge benefits that Amazon has seen by creating this subscription Amazon Prime membership. You look at Netflix. Netflix, almost, what is it, 3 or 4 years ago, they went through that price increase fiasco, and they almost, you know, gutted the company. But they came back, and what they did was really ingenious. They said, you know, people are using these devices, people are on the go. We need to make our content streamable and accessible from all these devices to meet the lifestyle of our customers. We also have to start creating our own content to give them the kind of premium content that's going to make people stay around longer. And so they went through the hard phase, and they came out on the other side. And now, you know, they have more U.S. subscribers than HBO, and they're a thriving subscription business. So there's a lot of examples. So maybe the last one I'll use is Adobe, who is it can't get any more traditional in software than Adobe was. And a couple, I think it was about 2 years ago, they decided they're going to completely change on a dime and stop selling their Creative Suite software and create what they call the Creative Cloud. And so all the things like Adobe Photoshop and Adobe Director and audio and all these great tools that people are used to, well, were used to buying as a big package and putting it on their own computer, now they basically subscribe to a monthly subscription fee anywhere from $50 to $75. And now they have access to this whole thing, and it gets constantly updated, and they keep constantly adding new pieces. And because they made the call early on, 2 years ago, they went through the phase of customers kind of grumbling and saying, well, now they're trying to make us, you know, pay every month as opposed to one big chunk. But as customers got used to it and saw the value in it and saw how they keep getting new stuff, they just recently announced that they're I think it's over $1 billion in revenue now in subscriptions, just because they made the call early and stuck with it. So.
Interesting. So those are some great examples. So now let's talk a little bit about some of the liabilities of a subscription model for companies and for customers.
Well, it's funny because I mentioned earlier about Apple buying Beats. Well, Beats is a kind of interesting story in not being as successful in subscriptions as you'd think they may be, because they were very successful in marketing the headphones. And I have a pair of headphones. I know a lot of people that have them. I go through the airport, seems like half the people are wearing those headphones. And so the co-founder of Beats, Jimmy Iovine, he's a big-time music industry exec, and he said a couple of years ago, or maybe it was last year, that they wanted not only to have people wearing the headphones, but they wanted to have, you know, more of a relationship with these customers. So they built the Beats music service, which is a subscription-based service. And the interesting thing is they had lots of marketing budget. They have Dr. Dre, who everybody kind of knows. And so they were kind of leveraging, I think, the marketing budget and the notoriety of Dr. Dre, and hoping that would help them build this subscription membership. And what's fascinating is they've been at it for about 4 or 5 months. And I think the latest number that I've heard, and maybe it's gone up since then, is that they had over 200,000 subscribers. Which, when you look at Spotify, a company that nobody had heard of 2 years ago or 3 years ago, that had limited marketing budget, but they built a music service on the foundation of social. So they really banked on people's not just wanting to hear music, but wanting to share music, wanting to talk about music. And so Spotify, with very limited resources compared to Beats, they have over, I believe the last number I heard was over 10 million premium subscribers to their, so that's, they're paying $9.99 a month, 10 million people. Whereas Beats, with the notoriety, with the well-known, you know, people at the top, with the marketing budget, I mean, 200,000 is not bad for 6 months, but it's nowhere near what these guys have done over that, for that amount of time.
Right.
So the whole idea is subscription businesses are definitely different than product-based transactional businesses. You can't go about it the same way. You really have to focus on things like service and even social, being, you know, there's a social component to this stuff. And if you don't have it all in place, like Beats wouldn't go into the Apple iTunes because they didn't want to give up the 30% commission, from what I hear. But if you don't leverage all the outlets and bake in social into the business model and service, customer support into the service model experience, then you're really not operating as efficiently, and you won't have the same benefits of the subscription business as you would otherwise. So I think those are really some key areas to think about. You have to have customer service and customer experience at the heart of your subscription business model. And you got to look at it. You got to approach it differently than the traditional business. Because if you don't do that, you're doomed not to be as successful as you could be.
Hmm. So now, just in closing, any final thoughts on kind of the subscription model and what it means for customer service?
Yeah, I think the couple of main things from a business perspective is that it is a whole new ball game. It, as I said just previously, it's not the same as the traditional transactional business. You don't even measure it the same way. The way that you look at how the health of your subscription business, you look at, they call it annual recurring revenue. It's called ARR. In some instances, some people look at that on a monthly recurring revenue basis. But how many customers do you have signed up, and how much revenue are they signed up for? And over a month or over a year, and that shows you kind of where your revenue is in the future of it, not looking at it, from a back-looking traditional measurement that we do with revenue. So that's a difference. That's a change. The focus on churn with subscriptions, the longer somebody's on a subscription, the better off you are from a financial standpoint. So you have to focus on, the health of the relationship with the subscribers. And you can do that by looking at how they're using the system or how they're using the service. And if there are any kinds of keys that will tell you, hey, this segment is starting to fall off, what can we do to keep them around? So it's a constant look. It's not the same as looking at it from the traditional customer product kind of view. So it's those are some of the really keys to understanding it. And then the last thing I think is it's an ongoing perpetual thing. It's not just, we got them on board and now they're going to stay on board. It's, you've got to keep proving value. You've got to keep layering on new ways that they can view as being value added. If you don't do that, if you just have your membership and it never changes, or you never add content, or you never add additional services, what's going to make them stay around if you're not showing them that you're looking at how they're changing over time and how you're adding value to meet their needs as they change over time?
Gotcha. Well, many thanks to you, Brent, for joining us today and shedding light on these issues. So thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
And for more on CRM more generally, check out searchcrm.com. And until next time, I'm Lauren Horwitz.